No sooner did Joan Crawford feel the sweet embrace of death than Hollywood set out on a mission to bury her again. It was called Mommy Dearest, and it was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hello, my name's Sean Collier. I'm here with two people who just want to get their GED and go home. It's Camila Adams.
Hello.
And Robin Hitchcock.
I can just sneak up on people.
Yeah, we did Night School. 35 and two thirds. That's pretty low for us. That's not bottom. That's like bottom 30.
I'm going to remember that movie as better than it actually was.
Really?
Yeah, because I found parts of it charming.
Yeah, I mean, there were bits and pieces of it, but still, it's like, yeah, it's just, it's still over the whole of it. It's just like, it was just disappointing.
It's a big old mess. It's a mess is what it is. But I will remember bits from it, which is more than I can say for a lot of movies.
Yeah, true story.
Well, you can write an essay, if you feel like it, on how movies like that killed big screen comedy.
Okay.
Because there are so many, particularly in the aughts and tens, there are so many big screen comedies that just aren't that funny. They're fine. There's some laughs, but they're not like a knockout of a comedic time.
Yeah.
And then, because people weren't laughing that much, they forgot that laughing with a group in the theater is what makes a comedy good and got used to watching this on streaming and kind of half paying attention to it.
Yeah.
And now they're not coming out in the theaters anymore. And the ones that do come out in the theaters, nobody goes to see. Like just happened with two of the best movies so far this year, Lisa Frankenstein and Driveaway Dolls. Nobody saw either one because they're like, I can watch that on streaming.
Those are always going to be niche movies, I think. I also think there were middling comedies all throughout the history of Hollywood, we just don't remember them. So it's like, you forget about the bad ones and the good ones stick around. But you're right, there are fewer good ones.
That's the music used to be good.
Yeah.
It did, but it also used to be bad. Anyway, why talk about Night School anymore? Let us tell you what happened. And I'm going to move this microphone so that I'm actually looking
at
both
of you. We're in a new recording space, everyone, if we sound different to you.
Yeah, also, yeah, we're getting used to our physical space right now. You're tangled.
We went from the Rugged Angel Studios to, like, the secret Rugged Angel Studios.
The cave.
The private Rugged Angel Studio.
Rugged Angel After Dark.
Yeah.
It's the quiet storm here at the Rugged Angel.
So, if you missed it, we had a movie draft between me and Robin. And because I've never won a movie draft, I just picked four movies that felt like people would vote for them.
Yes.
And Robin picked four movies that felt like no one would vote for them.
So funny.
And we were right.
And yes, that's exactly how it played out. The Omen did well.
I think it came in second, right?
Yeah, The Omen was close. Air Force One did fine. Mm-hmm. And the only one of Robin's picks that survived, Anatomy of a Murder, got a few little votes.
Thank you, few little votes.
But Mommy Dearest ran away with it. And I can tell you now, I really only knew Mommy Dearest as a movie I should probably see and hadn't.
Okay.
I could see the poster in my head, and I knew it was famous for some reason.
Okay.
I think in my head I was thinking of Whatever Happened to Baby June.
Okay, I confuse these movies all the time.
Right.
Really?
Yes.
So when it started, I was like, oh, a biopic of Joan Crawford? That's the psychological thriller I'm watching? Okay, sure.
So it was never like this, just the random like pop culture osmosis?
I knew No Wire Hangers, but I didn't know why No Wire Hangers or who was saying No Wire Hangers.
You realize that Joan Crawford is in Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And she plays the abused character in that.
Yes.
So
somehow those melded in my mind, even though I couldn't have really told you what either one was.
I totally get it. I have literally confused those movies in the past.
So it's a movie I picked that I had never seen and didn't know what was. Still, I'm happy with it because what a ride. What a ride it is.
Indeed. It's one of my favorites. And I was thrilled that you picked it for one and over the moon when it won. So, yay.
So I only knew this movie as camp classic, Mommy Dearest. Mm-hmm. And Colin warned me before it started, like, it's actually very upsetting. Mm. And I'm so glad he did because I did not watch this as camp. Like, no. There are a couple moments where I'm like, I understand why people embrace this as camp. Obviously, yeah. There are really over-the-top emotional things. Yeah. But I just watch this as a pretty straightforward horror story.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, to this day, I don't recall how I came across this movie. Like, okay. I thought for the longest time that my mom showed it to me. But she claims, she's like, I have never even seen the movies. Like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Also, that just seems like a dangerous movie to show your daughter. Right. Mm-hmm. Unless you have, like, an airtight relationship.
Right. But, and I don't know, like, I don't know if this was, like, during my Faye Dunaway era that I was, like, watching all of Faye Dunaway movies.
You had a Faye Dunaway era?
Yeah. Or it was, like, this started my Faye Dunaway era.
Okay.
And so, yeah. So, I don't know. But it's always been one of my faves.
And I didn't realize, maybe much like you, I kind of knew it was supposed to be over the top, but as it's, I watched this in two sittings, just the way, the day I had.
Same.
I watched
for an
hour.
A point of, I can't do this anymore.
Wow. Yeah. No, I just, schedule-wise, I had to. So I watched the first, and that first hour is like, what great, you know, cinematography and production design, and I bet this was nominated for awards. And then during the break between me finishing, I look it up and I'm like, people say this is the worst movie ever made? What the hell? I have no, we'll get into it, yeah. But I was blindsided by the fact that there are people who are like, ah, that famous bomb. I'm like, really?
Yeah, I'm still like kind of shocked that it was even in the theater, because I enjoy it. I feel like there's a lot of redeeming qualities about it production wise, but it just kind of reads like a made for TV movie.
Oh, 100%.
Mm-hmm. And so I just always assumed it was just like, oh yeah, tonight CBS special.
Right.
This is what that was.
Hold, please. Since you're the most familiar with it by far. Hi, I made a dramatic face when returning from a cough break.
Sorry.
Robin found it silly.
It was.
Camila, you know the movie well. Tell us what happens in it.
Joan Crawford is a Hollywood movie star in the Golden Age. She has accomplished all of her goals. Now she wants a kid. She can't conceive, so she tries to adopt, but they turn her down because she's a single mom. Her boyfriend / manager, Greg, pulls some illegal strings and gets her a baby. She doubles down and adopts another baby, so now she has Christina and Christopher. Joan is a bit controlling, but it's not her fault. She's an aging woman in Hollywood, and spoiled Christina won't give her the respect any stranger on the street would. Sure, they're only allowed to keep one of hundreds of birthday gifts they receive, and they have to sleep strapped to their beds, and they're forced to eat red meat. But Christina could have kept a lot of that side eye to herself. How hard is it to keep wire hangers out of your closet? Joan is a single Oscar-winning mom just trying to keep it together while Christina drives her crazy with all her backtalk and mockery. So Christina gets set off to boarding school, gets expelled because she knows where to find the boys and the booze. Christina, full of judgment, won't let Mommy Dearest enjoy her drunken shopping sprees. Joan marries the Pepsi King and dies. He dies. And then Christina gets hospital level 6, so her selfless Mommy Dearest stands in for her on her soap opera while she recovers. To thank her mom, she moves away, leaves Joan to die all alone. Christina finally learns her lesson when Joan leaves her nothing. Now go make your Mommy Dearest a martini.
Perfect 60 seconds.
And it's all in jest, obviously. Yeah.
Right.
It's all in jest, Kaja.
Right, yeah, exactly. No, it's, you know, it's just one of those, it's like, you know, I guess, you know, coming in today, now I know, but I just feel like everybody knows Mommy Dearest. Mm-hmm. But
I knew no wire hangers ever. I knew it was about Joan Crawford, and I knew that it was about Joan Crawford being a bad mom.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I also knew it was a, air quotes, camp classic.
Right.
So I had a very different movie in my head.
Obviously they did not mean it to be camp.
Yeah.
But I feel like I know it's like a gay icon.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's an iconic gay situation, movie, pop culture, and they're in that lifestyle. And I spent like a lot of time watching it this time wondering why. But then I was like, just fucking Joan Crawford was fabulous. That's why.
Yeah.
And these costumes.
And a lot of, shall we say, drag face is happening throughout. So
I think also there is something, I am a straight woman, so maybe I have no idea what I'm talking about. This might be me speaking out of turn. But I think there is something to be said about gay men who primarily are interacting with other men in a lot of their life, finding this mother-daughter relationship less realistic, more comical.
Interesting. Yeah. Or a lot of them are dealing with their own triggers of, you know.
That's true. A lot of gay kids have really strained relationships with their parents.
Right.
Oh, that's very sad.
Yeah.
Well, it certainly wasn't a hit, even if it was the number one movie in America. Released September 18th of 1981, 21st Nomia of the year. It won its opening weekend with about $4.6 million. taking the crown from another one-week winner, Continental Divide, a John Belushi rom-com. It's technically the first Amblin movie.
I'm vaguely familiar with it.
Crickets.
And lost it to the Burt Reynolds comedy Paternity the following weekend, which won 3 weeks. That was a big hit. Mommy Dearest only made about $19 million, considered a bomb at the time, just the 38th top grossing film of the year. Critics, contemporary critics, hated this movie.
Right. I saw Roger Ebert gave it 1 star.
And said, I can't imagine who would want to subject themselves to this movie.
I kind of agree.
Adding it was unremittingly depressing, not to any purpose of drama or entertainment. That's a little much.
Okay, yeah. I think it is unremittingly depressing. I do think there is a purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Variety had the best line I saw. Dunaway does not chew scenery. Dunaway starts neatly at each corner of the set in every scene and swallows it whole, co-stars and all. To which I'm like, yeah, good performance.
Yeah, right, yeah.
I mean, there are times
give
when...
Give it up for Faye.
There are times when a performance like this would not be appropriate. This is not one of those times. No. It kind of makes the whole thing.
Exactly. Especially when you're talking about someone like Joan Crawford.
Yeah.
Like she's playing. Obviously, I don't know what Joan was like in real life. But I would assume that this is like probably on par for the course. Like,
the minimal things I know about Joan Crawford... They all track this, right? She was an incredibly dramatic person.
Right.
She was an incredibly dramatic person, and most of the time we're seeing her in this movie, she's either breaking down or putting on an act.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is how... What do you want?
Right. It seems it's right.
Drab
there.
Realism?
Right.
No.
I did think she was best in the scenes where she was putting on an act. That was honestly my favorite scenes in the movie were all the like hostage videos.
Which is like watching Christina
talk about how she gives away her Christmas presents.
We're going to sing Christmas carols with the neighbors later.
I just think that it reminded me of Shirley MacLaine in Guarding Tess when she went to the opera and left, you know, and then suddenly like turn on a switch and suddenly she's public persona. First lady, it was like suddenly she's public persona Joan Crawford.
Right.
Yeah. By the way, Guarding Tess, still not impressed, but once a day since we did it, I've thought, I don't want to be observed today. Or what is it? Known? I don't want to be known today.
Yes.
That is
I've also said it several times at Arcade Comedy Theater, and I always feel like such a jackass when I do.
But that sometimes you don't.
I know.
Like when people want to talk to you and shit.
And that is the place where I am most known.
Yeah. There were critics that praised Faye Dunaway, though. Pauline Kael said it was a startling, ferocious performance.
It is. That's great. I also thought Diana Scarwid was good.
That's her daughter?
The older version of her daughter.
Yeah, and it's always funny when she pops up in things. Now as an adult, it's like, I know that face. Oh, it's Christina.
So she is an Academy Award-nominated actress.
Is she?
And she was nominated the year before this for a movie called Inside Moves, which I might be the only living person who has seen.
Mm-hmm.
And she's pretty good in it, but I think it might have been one of those best supporting new people I would like to have sex with nominations.
Wow.
I'm not sure. She was pretty good. It's just kind of a light role in a light movie. Regardless, she should have had a better career. And I wonder if this movie is part of why she did
it. Oh, absolutely.
Oh, that's such a shame.
Particularly because this is in many ways, unfortunately, the movie that made the Razzies. This was year two of the Razzies. This was the second annual Razzie Awards.
Is this when they locked in the point of the Razzies is to shit on things that gay people and women like?
Pretty much.
Oh.
This won 5 Razzies.
Wow.
Worst Picture, Worst Actress. That was shared with Bo Derek and Tarzan the Ape Man. Steve Forrest won Worst Supporting Actor. Diana Scarwid won Worst Supporting Actress. And it won Worst Screenplay. It had many more nominations, including the tiny child who played young Christina.
Who was also good.
Was nominated as Worst Supporting Actress and Worst New Star.
That's insane. That's just mean. Because that little girl did her job.
And she's a child.
Right.
If you're like... you know, rebellious awards body again in year two, like you're not desperate for attention yet. Like,
yeah,
is like we need to mock this tiny child. How old could she be? 8?
8 maybe?
Who clearly is trying her best. What, like, you think she's a diva and she showed up at the set and didn't do her homework?
Exactly.
She's just doing what she can. I know we've said this forever. Mostly Robin has led the way. But this kind of cements for me, once and for all, fuck the Razzies. I would like to propose I'm never mentioning them again in the taxi segment.
Yes, okay, agreed.
Yeah. Let's move on from
they
the
are
those guys.
Dead to us.
We are losing this battle because they just got that weird stamp of legitimacy from Criterion. I don't
they
know.
They did what now?
The not on disc, on the streaming channel, one of the categories was like Razzie Month on the Criterion channel.
I'm going to be sending a strongly worded email about this.
And it had some things that have since been reclaimed, like Ishtar and a few others, but it also had a few that were just like Freddy Got Fingered was on there. And it's like, what are you doing?
This is dumb.
Just, oh God, don't.
Go away. Yeah. Stop. Like, we don't need to talk about it anymore, but here's the other thing. If you've heard about it, it's not the worst movie of the year.
Right.
Lots of movies come out, and I guarantee you there was one that barely made it and got put on 10 screens and made $1,000 that was absolutely unwatchable. Right. Like, that, if it played in theaters, there's worse.
Yeah.
I guarantee it.
I find it illuminating every year to look at the full list of movies that are eligible for Academy Awards and see how many I have never heard of.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I try to follow these things.
Right.
I saw some of those during the pandemic because that's, you know, the drive-ins were all going and they had to take whatever. And so some of those would make it into the mix. And I'm like, huh, this made it all the way to being a finished movie. Wild.
Distribution and everything.
It's so weird. All right. Be it hereby resolved, we will never mention the Razzies again because they made fun of that poor child. All right. Mommy Dearest, obviously reclaimed as a cult classic, a favorite of drag performers. This happened almost immediately, much like The Room.
Yeah.
The producers got wind of the fact that people were laughing and changed the whole marketing right away. Like, they tried to sell it as a black comedy and, like, made up a new tagline. Like, she's the ultimate mother. And tried to lean into it.
Like, you can't be like, oh, this is a black comedy. No.
No.
Christina wrote this as a memoir, yes?
Yes.
We're coming up on that.
But... Okay. Oh, okay. All right. Sorry to get ahead of us.
No,
let's go.
It's part of that. It has been reclaimed over the years. Most newer reviews or retrospective reviews are pretty good to the point where it's at like 50% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
Now. So it's slowly gaining the reputation it did not have on release. So to your point, how much of this is true? Probably not much.
There was a Joan Crawford and there was a Christina and Christopher Crawford.
Christina Crawford wrote the memoir. Even she said the most dramatic stuff in this movie didn't happen and wasn't in the book.
Right.
Wire hangers is not in the book. Bring me the axe is not in the book. And she did not.
What about hitting her and strangling her?
That's in the book.
Okay.
Yeah, she probably got smacked around.
Right.
Because, I mean, also just, I mean, not even, and again, that's not even necessarily a testament to like Joan Crawford being a bad person. That's what people thought that they were supposed to do to kids at the time.
It's true.
Ever since this has come out, there has been a war between Christina and the later, because Joan adopted more children later that are not in this movie.
Four total.
And they've all said,
what?
Oh yeah. And all of the younger ones have said every word of that book is bullshit. Now, there's no reason to make up your mind based on that because it could, there's plenty of cases where one kid has a much different experience than another kid.
Jane Fonda's first kid.
But there's a lot of people who have said this seems fishy. And Christina has been back and forth about a lot of the details. Not to deny her experience, I'm sure Joan Crawford was a shitty mom, particularly to her first kid.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there was some violence.
Oh.
But I think fairly little of this happened as it is depicted.
Mm. Oh, that's horrible. Film. That makes me feel
Yeah.
That makes my tummy hurt because it is unfair to Christina and the abuse that she did suffer to make her then have to deny, to make her have to then defend her mother.
Right. Yeah.
Feels really horrible to me.
Yeah.
And she didn't participate in the film.
Oh, this because one of the things I really liked was that last scene when Xander Berkeley, Xander Berkeley,
right from the hilltop in The Walking Dead.
When he shows up, it says she always gets the last word, right? And she's laughing up at us from hell, and she goes, she always gets the last word. does she? Yeah. Right? I was like, fuck yes, hell yes. Now, good for her.
Good for her.
Right?
That,
like
that happened.
Okay.
That part's true. Like they were cut out of the will and all it said was for reasons that are known to them.
Yeah. But will she like get the last word? Because I thought this movie was meant to be Christina's last word.
Well, the book was.
Right. But then they made this movie, which will be more remembered than her book, which said a different thing.
Yeah.
I'm very upset about this.
I'm confused as to like, the movie depicts Joan as like living in squalor by the time at the end of her death on a shitty laying on a mattress on the floor.
Because all that Pepsi money's gone.
Right. What was she leaving them? What did she have to leave
them? That's a really good point.
Like, what were they expecting to get?
I do love the house before she loses everything. Oh, I'm obsessed with the house.
Yo, the staircase?
Yes.
Like
the shot where she first has the baby and she's framed by the staircase. I'm like, oh, this is an old timer.
I know. And
put
my,
it in a museum.
My favorite is like when she takes the rare meat out of Christina's bedroom and she's got that beautiful fucking sharp ass silk silver dress on and she just comes, she's like, descends from the staircase and like this train is just dragging through. I'm like, ah, that is perfection. I yes. love everything about this. But yeah, that house was amazing.
Amazing.
And there's plenty of really good scenes until the wire hangers. Unimpeachable. Just so good.
I'm sorry. Like,
on so many levels, you couldn't do that again if you wanted to.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I never moved myself, I guess, for so long from like the personal tragedy of this film, of what this is based upon and what this could have, like, whose lives are actually like kind of affected like this. But damn, that scene. Like, yeah, when she rolls in there and she's got the fucking cold cream
on
her face.
I didn't know that the cold cream, I kind of had that image in my head, but I didn't realize how important that is to the scene because it makes her look like a monster.
Yeah.
Like she looks less than human.
Yeah.
The first shot where she comes out of bed and she's like bandaged and everything.
Yes.
And again, not knowing what this movie about, I was like, is this a movie about a lady with no eyes and another lady with eyes who manipulates her?
What is that bandaging situation? Is she like trying to prevent like a crepey neck?
Yeah, it's like the
does that work? Because I should be doing
Dude,
that.
I don't know. It's like in the 40s, they had so many random fucking beauty tips.
Yeah, it's like sleep with a bunch of cold cream on your face. Yeah, yeah.
An ace bandage around your mouth, your face to prevent crow's feet.
That scene is great. Every minute of the birthday party is great.
Oh my god.
When the look she gives the photographer when he contradicts her, like, you know, oh yeah, the grass stain might read. She's like, could kill. Just like kill. Like he should have dropped dead right then and there.
The first scene with her and her little boyfriend where she's like, I can handle the socks. And it's the most erotic thing anyone has ever said.
Right? And like poor Carol Ann's just like, should I not be here right now?
Poor Carol Ann, period.
I feel the most sorry for Carol Ann.
And then her being so sad at the funeral, it just broke my heart.
Yeah, like she lived her whole damn life for Joan and got nothing in return. Like she had no children, no husband. Like it's just as far as I know. But I met the actress.
Who played Carol Ann?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And it was crazy to me because it was like, I was sitting next to her because it was when I was working Comic Cons and it was in Florida and I was sitting next to her. My guy's booth was right next to hers and I was sitting next to her all day and I'm like, she looks so familiar. And then it just like just got busy and whatever. And I was like, what? And then a minute it hit, I'm like, oh my God. And I stood up and I'm like, you're Carol Ann.
See, this is why when you go now, they just list what movies they were in on the poster behind them just so no one's standing going, where are you from? It's on the pub. Read the thing about my
dad. Yeah, but she was lovely.
And that's
great. And she also wrote a book about the making of Mommy Dearest. I have not read it, but that exists.
Because it seems like the making of the movie was nearly as dramatic as the life of Joan Crawford. It seems like, so what is this? I do think it then goes over the top. Like the Red Book author choking scene, I'm like, we have jumped the shark. Like it is, Faye has gone so big and so hard. And that it's just like,
I was deeply upset by that scene.
Yeah, because
I lost me a little.
I felt it. I felt her rage. Because there's a moment when she's just like, Christina asks her, why did you adopt me? And she's just like, Christina said something and she smacks her, no reaction. She smacks her again, no reaction. And she's just like, just snaps and is like, fuck, like, why? Mm-hmm. Like, why do you make me do this?
There was a part, because I watched the kid part and then I watched the Diana Scarwood part the next day. In the kid part, at some point, she says, like, part of the reason I adopted you was for publicity, right? Am I remembering that wrong?
No, she says that during that slap.
Okay.
Yeah, because she's like,
because
you know,
I do kind of respect her for acknowledging that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, she was pushed to it at that right. point to finally say it. And, you know, obviously she didn't, you know, that's like. She was trying to keep, I don't know, obviously she didn't mean to say that to her, but I'm sure it was true.
Right. But at the same time, how could anyone deal with their parent saying that to
right.
them? That's impossible.
And I don't know how, you know, and I have not read the actual book, but I don't know, like, how do you have a relationship with your mother after that? After, like, it's bad enough you've been getting, like, mentally and physically abused for your whole life and sent off to boarding schools and whatnot. And then for her to flat out tell you is like, I adopted you partially for publicity.
Because like, she's still her mom.
How do you return from that? Like, it's just, I don't know. That's just me. But any hoozles.
I
guess mother and daughter relationships are always
yes,
fucking complicated.
Right. Yes. I think that, you know, I think one of the reasons this movie really got to me emotionally was because part of the reason I don't have kids is because I am afraid of being that kind of mother. Really? Right. Mm. And because I have, you
what,
know,
like pushed to the point of rage.
I don't have great control of my emotions. Right. I have bipolar disorder and like, I didn't ever want to have a kid that I was treating that way.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't have kids. I'm happy with that decision for other reasons, but it hurt. It hurt to watch and think about.
Yeah.
I'm getting choked up.
It's definitely, you know, those of us who were not born being able to, or born, we're not taught to regulate our own emotions. And then so, and you don't even recognize that, most of us, until, you know, it's your late in adult life.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you bring a child into the world and you're in charge of this child now. And now, your emotions aren't regulated. Theirs obviously aren't. They're brand
new.
They're brand new to this fucking world. They don't know anything. And so you're like raising, what I have learned is I am raising myself and I'm raising Kajia at the same time, because I just thank God that I started therapy.
Yes.
10 years before she was born.
Yes.
Because, you know, shit could have been much different. And, you know, it's just, you know, I'm not perfect. But I do know when to apologize and when to pull it back and when to walk away and never lay hands on her.
Yeah.
I may say some crazy shit, but I also know to like walk away before it gets to that point. I scream in a lot of pillows.
God bless you. But you raised a good point earlier with like, it was the norm for people to hit their kids.
Mm-hmm.
It was also the norm for people to not go to therapy.
Right.
Yeah. Going to an analyst was a sign of being a deeply broken person.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, it is, I think a lot of people in that generation were worse parents than most of us have been privileged to have.
Right.
Obviously not all of us. I know plenty of people my age with god-awful parents.
Yeah. Taylor Tomlinson has that joke that you introduce your partner to your parents so that your partner understands why you're mean to them sometimes. It's like, it looks like I could be doing a lot worse than I am.
Yes.
It's maybe that's what this movie is about. There is inevitably static between the parents and children, and when you begin that relationship on such fucked up grounds as being bought into the home of Joan Crawford.
Right.
It's going to go badly, no matter how, you know, and the fact that like they still take pains to show like, here's Christina at the funeral. Here is, you know, it actually shows the complexity of a little bit by making it up and doing weird over the top shit.
Right.
This is a weird, interesting movie.
Yeah, I do want to say another thing, because I want to explain why my score will be kind of lower, is I felt like this was weirdly paced and weirdly plotted.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just seemed that the emotional tone was not building properly, it was like, and I guess that is more realistic for an abusive relationship, is right. that it's not a straight line. But it really felt like all over the place to me.
Well, I mean, and I guess to your point, that is what it's like to be in an emotion, in an abusive relationship. It's just all over the place. You're always on pins and needles. Like, there's a scene where Christina's doing laundry and her mom pops down the stairs and she's like, oh, sorry, you scared me. It's like, it must be like that all the time for you. Like, anytime you're in her presence. Another, something that it was kind of like, I guess, sort of interweaved in it, but I feel like Joan was a product of her own upbringing and her own environment as well.
Mm-hmm.
Joan did not have a good, childhood. She was, you know, she had her own fucking problems with abuse. And I think she left home very early and like did some questionable things, yada, yada, yada. And then also, but then women in Hollywood and in that entertainment industry, they are not treated with any sort of respect. And especially like now we're still just like trying to hang on. But even then it was just absolutely worse. And so not to give reason or an excuse, but damn it, Joan needed therapy like a motherfucker beforehand. And I don't know if it was illegal, like if there actually was an illegal deal is how she got this kid. Like,
She wasn't allowed in California. Whatever the California law was at the time is it had to be, there were no single adoptions.
Mm. Okay, but that's a bullshit law.
It is a bullshit law, but
I'm not going to judge her for breaking that unjust law.
Right. That said, yes, this baby was purchased, which does fuck the situation up a little bit.
I mean,
that is
how adoption works.
Well, sure.
Okay. Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they just try to make it seem better. And, I think it's a sick business in that sense, because, you know, the government wants to control women and not control their bodies and, you know, not allow them to have abortions. But okay, so then allow the fucking families who can't have children to adopt. You take care of this woman who is going to go ahead and choose the adoption plan. Pay for her to go through it and whatnot, and just not like you get charged just thousands upon thousands.
Yeah. I think people should be able to get abortions and adoptions.
Right.
Yes.
Can we just supply that for
us? Like, what if people got to make their own choices about what their family was?
What if people only had a baby when they wanted to?
Yes.
And not go broke when you and you can't and you want to and you know,
cause, and got a baby if they did want to.
Right. It's just such a fucked up system.
And I thought this movie had moments. I did balk a little bit at some of the depiction of adoption as like an inherently corrupt thing, because I have good friends who are adopted or have adopted. Mm-hmm. And I also am very aware of how, because I have good friends who are adopted, have adopted, of how gross the system can be. But this movie felt judgmental about her being an adopted mother in a way that, like, she wouldn't have been such a bad mother if this was her biological child. And I don't like that.
And I also see that, like, in a lot of, I don't like it when they describe her as her adoptive mom. And they describe Christina as her adoptive child.
Yes.
Like, that's not, you don't put a stigma on it. And
right, then, this is my adopted daughter, Margot, right?
Yeah, who fucking does that? Who talks like that?
Royal Tenenbaum.
This is my adopted daughter, Margot Tenenbaum.
And there's also, like, the scene, and I don't know if it's, like, from a real soundbite from Joan, but when they're being, she's being interviewed, and they're like, oh, you opened your home to these orphans. And she's like, life's hard enough when you are wanted. Like, damn it, Joan. Like,
yes.
That's not the narrative you want to put out there.
That is, you weren't wanted.
Let's bring it down a little bit with this wacky trailer.
We're ready for you, Miss Crawford.
You know what's missing in my life?
Come on, you've got everything you want.
No, I don't. I want a baby.
You're a lucky little girl, and very expensive. You cost me a lot of favors.
Christina, darling, I'm gonna make a perfect life for you.
I love you, Mommy dearest.
I love you, Gina, darling.
It's not fair.
Ah, but nobody ever said life was fair, Gina.
I'll tell you what you're gonna do. You're gonna march yourself upstairs to your room and we'll stay there.
No, I won't.
Yes, you will.
Mommy, please! Mommy, please! No!
Look at this roar. Do you
because of what I told you. No wire hangers ever!
Yes, Mommy dearest.
When I asked you to call me that, I wanted you to mean it.
Joan Crawford, the most dramatic role of her life, was her life. Frank Yablons presents Faye Dunaway as Joan Crawford in Mommy Dearest.
I guess it is a horror movie then.
Yeah.
This is a horror movie trailer.
Well, one of the most chilling scenes to me is when she overhears Christina's chastising her dolls.
Oh my gosh.
Well, no, not that one. The next one when she's like after she told them to stop making noise because she needs to sleep, and then she hears her words being parroted back by Christina to her dolls. Christina comes back from her swim and she's like, "My babies! Someone stole all my babies!" And Joan's just like, "Well, now they won't wake you up when you need your rest." And just, I'm like, "Oh my god!"
Yeah,
Christina should have. I mean, again, not faulting this child, but I feel like you had all the warning signs. I needed you to like just tighten it up. Just tighten it up. Don't give her a reason.
Good trailer, though. And the letterbox list is hysterical in a floral dress. That should explain itself. If you like those moments, there's a list for you.
Hysterical like the uterus kind.
Gotcha. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. That's all right.
Yeah. I don't know, I'd give it another 10 points if the corpse had risen out of the coffin and choked her. I really felt like that was about to happen, even if it was just a little fake-out dream sequence. I was like, this, she's waking up. 65. I like it a lot, and I think there's a lot to recommend about it, but it is messy. This situation and this movie are messy, so I will cap it at 2/3.
Oh, wow. I am I'm being way too generous.
No, you aren't.
You like this movie. Yeah.
And also, I'd like to point out the scene where she's talking to Christina in her basement when she's telling her they're broke now. She looks so much like my grandmother in that moment. Like, Faye Dunaway as Joan Crawford looks like my grandmother.
Those moments are so weird. I know exactly what I have that with a couple things, and I know exactly what you're talking about, and it's like bone chilling.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's crazy. 83.
I thought you were gonna go higher. Yeah. I'm gonna go 50. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe no, let me do 51.
Okay.
I'm gonna get this movie is above water for me. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, here's 51. A little life jacket for you.
I don't recommend anyone watch this.
But if you do.
But I respect it enough that I want it to be above water.
But if you do watch it, you should be drunk.
You should be drunk. You can smell the booze coming off of this movie.
Oh,
get on that level. 66 1/3 is the final score. I'm happy to have won a movie draft. I kind of feel like I didn't, and actually Camila won that movie draft.
Thanks. Thanks,
through some kind of mind control situation.
Thanks, Twitter.
And also, next time I'm coming back full strength.
All right.
No more of this searching for the weird Oscar-nominated movies on the list.
I think we can cross off mopping/sweeping on the bingo card.
I'm not mad at you, Helga. I'm mad at the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
This is a 2 Diet Coke episode.
What bothered me about that scene was just like, I hope if I'm that rich, I won't care anymore.
Yeah.
And yet she so does.
Was this more than 2 weeks, number one?
No, just one.
I think that's it.
Yeah, it might be it.
Okay.
Unless Mommy is a career, and it is, but that's not what you meant with job or career in title. Oh, movie about revenge? Christina's revenge?
I would say no, because the movie, because the real Christina didn't have anything to do with the movie.
It's not Kill Bill.
And it's not about revenge.
Yeah.
It is revenge.
It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. Let's start with our Oscars recap. Oh boy, show was okay. Oppenheimer won a lot of awards.
Robin got really angry.
See, we're recording this before the Oscars, but it'll come out after. We're pretty sure those three statements are going to be correct.
I am thrilled that Ryan Gosling will be performing I'm Just Ken.
Yes, that's great.
I just saw that.
I'm going to enjoy parts of the show no matter what. And I am trying. I watched Inception earlier this week. I'm going to watch Memento before the Oscars. I'm trying to remind myself that Christopher Nolan does make good movies.
Yeah. I'm just trying to make it to the end of the interview with him in Sight and Sound that's like 60 pages long. This guy's got a lot to say, that guy. We shouldn't waste much time because we don't know what happened. My bold prediction is that Poor Things gets blanked.
Oh, I don't think that's bold.
You don't think that's
bold? I mean, it could win costume or production design, yeah. But I don't think it's going to.
Yeah. I I'll be a little bummed and Robin will be a little happy, but try to hold it in to not rub it in my face.
Also, Emma Stone might win.
She might win.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I hope not.
I think there's enough. I mean, I hope not because I think history, but these already happened. You don't care.
Okay. Why are we pretending to react to a thing?
To what we assume will happen. Robin, what'd you watch?
Okay, Dune. Dune Part 2.
Tune.
How was that?
Tune. Dune. I'm stealing that joke.
Looking forward to Throne.
I really liked it. I still can't believe that I like these Dune movies.
I couldn't get through the first one.
I don't really like Denis Villeneuve, and I thought it was going to insist upon itself and be terrible, but instead it insists upon itself, and I love it.
Really?
I don't get it.
Is it just like a cinematic dream? Like
so
wet dream? Like
part kinda? Of it is that. Although I will say, I actually saw it twice because I'm a dork, and because I wanted to see it with my Dune boys, and the only way we could see it all sitting together was if we saw a regular normal screening. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, have I denied myself the massive, wonderful experience? Yeah. So I had a day off yesterday. I went to see it in Dolby.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, it's not that much better in Dolby.
Really?
The main thing that was different was the sound that I can feel much more
you can feel it.
Than the dazzling image on a huge silver screen.
Right.
The dazzling images were great in a regular screening, and I suspect they'll be great on your TV. It's a very cool looking movie without it being a pristine, perfect picture.
Yeah. It's every sci-fi epic wants to hit on all cylinders, and most of them don't on like two cylinders, and thus fall apart. And these just kind of don't.
Speaking of camp, one of the movies I watched this week was Southland Tales.
I keep meaning to.
Okay, it's on Tubi right now.
Oh, we have a fancy.
Oh,
Mary Beth loves that and was like, you need to see this in the best format possible and bought a fancy edition.
So what happened is we watched The Box because Colin really likes that episode of The Twilight Zone. Mm. The Box is not good, but it did make me think, I really want to watch the movie that Richard Kelly made that is allegedly worse than this. So we immediately watched Southland Tales, and my review on Letterboxd was going to be straight men can't do intentional camp. But then I found no evidence that Richard Kelly is straight beyond the latex nurse costumes in the film. So I intentional camp is really hard to do is where I landed on. And this failed for me. But it also reminded me of Under the Silver Lake. And then which my Letterboxd review was about how when a white man has their first movie well received, their second movie is an exploration of their id. And I think what Denis Villeneuve did correctly was he waited 15 years.
Right.
He let it cook.
Yeah.
He was like, instead of I'm going to make that movie about what if somebody showed up and said they were the Messiah that everybody starts outlining in their head when they're 12 years old. Mm-hmm. He was like, I'm going to let this cook. I'm going to figure out how to do this incredibly difficult thing, both adapting Dune and making a movie about a white guy who shows up and says he's the Messiah.
Cast is great. Vibes are amazing.
I can't believe that Austin Butler was so good when he's not
really
naked.
Good.
He should have been naked.
I will say I had a little, it didn't hurt it that much, but I had a little of your reaction to Spider-Verse, Spider-Verse, where like this doesn't have a beginning, middle, or end.
No, no, no.
This
is pure the middle. Second half of a movie.
And I think it's the middle third of a movie. Okay. I mean, I know that technically the book probably ends
the
about
the book ends roughly there. I haven't read the book, but my understanding
either.
Is it ends roughly there.
But this just feels like some stuff, but like previously on Dune.
Yeah,
like
that's fair.
The whole way. But that said, it's really good.
And it's so good. Great.
What else you see? other than Southland Tales.
I watched Robot Dreams, which is one of the animated feature nominees, and it is emotionally devastating.
I was worried about that.
Yes. It's basically past lives, but one of the characters is a dog and the other is a robot. Or like, you know that scene in Futurama where his dog is waiting for him
Don't
forever?
Don't bring it up.
Yeah, it's that.
It's too painful.
It's that. It's really hard. But so cute.
Yeah.
What I should pull up my Letterboxd. Am I missing anything? Also, how are we doing on time?
My God. We're running out.
All right. Then I didn't see anything else. Forget about it.
I want your one word reaction to Napoleon.
There you go. More intentional camp.
Yeah.
Right? The camp moments were the best, but it didn't work.
I did. When he wants to have the mummy whisper in his ear, but he's not tall enough, so he brings a little stool over. That was great.
I understand why people who liked it as Napoleon as a weird little guy liked it as Napoleon as a weird little guy.
Yeah.
And Destiny has brought me this lamb chop is something I will say for the rest of my life.
Camila?
I did not watch anything.
Great.
I did sort of watch Marcel the Shell with Shoes On.
Oh, my favorite movie of that year.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, I don't think I can really, because Kaj was watching it too. And so, I did enjoy what I was watching. She was enjoying it. She thought he was adorable. Had she not been there and distracted me, I'm pretty sure I would have cried a lot.
I cried so much.
Yeah, but it was, I enjoyed what I saw.
Adam Sandler in Spaceman. You tried and you failed, but you tried.
I can't believe they made a movie literally called Spaceman. Mm-hmm. If it was called Sad Spaceman, this would be even more ridiculous. But they made a movie called Spaceman, and Sean Collier does not like it.
And is being serious?
It falls over.
He has to do a serious movie every couple years.
He's a lonely spaceman. He has to go to Jupiter because there's a weird cloud, and he has to face. It's every sad space. Oh, I'm up here and I'm lonely. Only in this one, a maybe real ancient or maybe hallucinated floating space spider with a human mouth.
Nope.
Voiced by Paul Dano.
Absolutely not.
Comes up and they have therapy for 2 hours. He just talks to him about why he fucked up his relationship. And it's like, no, this is just, he's hugging a big space spider. This is not. This doesn't work
Absolutely
anymore.
Absolutely not. I want nothing to do with
it. It didn't really catch on, so you're not going to have anything to do with it. Finally took Robin's advice and watched Airport from 1970. That's such a badass movie.
Airport fucks.
I want to watch all of them, but I know it's going to go downhill in a hurry.
I also keep, every time I see 75 or 77, I'm like, should I? But I haven't.
Oh, what else? The High Sierra is good with Humphrey Bogart. How to Have Sex won one of the prizes at Cannes that isn't the big prize in certain regard, or a jury prize or something. 3, 19-year-olds or thereabouts go off to a vacation and want a party, and it turns sinister very quickly. That's very good. If it's playing near you, go see it. And Imaginary, about the teddy bear.
Yeah, how's that?
This is the horror movie.
This is the horror one, not If.
Yes.
This is, it's not great, but in the middle, when it's bad, like set up and first 2 acts are not good. And in the middle, I was like, this would be good if X, Y, and Z. And then it did X, Y, and Z. Oh. Like it very feel, especially this Blumhouse, like very generic, like this shares 2/3 of a plot with 10 other Blumhouse movies.
Right.
And I don't want to give it away, but like they keep teasing, like Chauncey, the bear, Chauncey says, we're going to go on a trip to where he's from. And I'm like,
ooh,
we're either not going to see where he's from, or it's going to be a big empty room like in Insidious. And instead, it's a crazy horror fantasy place.
That sounds
like,
fun.
Like it's the 80s again. Like doing a Hellraiser or a Nightmare on Elm Street.
Okay.
And I was just sitting there thinking, all I want is a big weird fantasy place. And then we went there. And it was a little silly and a little spooky. And shame on me. The other thing I was thinking throughout was, you know, there's a kooky old lady that knows what's really going on character. Mm-hmm. This is a trope. We meet them every now and then. And I was sitting there thinking, why do you ever do that? and not cast a horror icon of the past.
Yeah.
Why would you not? And then I looked it up after. It's the gym teacher from Carrie.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, good job there too. Like, it's still like 6 out of 10, but like it's just manages to work.
Nice.
It just manages to work. Most
rotten. Speaking of not being able to stop thinking about things, I can't believe how much I had to think about Blonde during Dune Part 2.
Why?
Because there's a talking fetus.
Oh, there is a talking fetus. This one's a little more, much more justified than Blonde.
Yes.
The talking fetus is played by Anya Taylor-Joy. And when she shows up, you're like, yeah, that looks right.
She does have a fetus's face.
Somehow true.
She's a very beautiful woman.
All right, we're drawing a normal movie. Nothing fancy, nothing different. Robin and Camila have vetoes. I do not. What did I veto immediately? Oh, Valentine's Day. It's just not having it.
The suspense is killing me.
Right?
Sean, you're normally faster than this. What's going on?
I don't have a surface. It's supposed to be, I got to lean down here.
I'll remember that for next time.
What's not a great payoff to suspense? The Maze Runner is not a great payoff to suspense. Nothing wrong with it. Maybe just another one of those.
Listen, I'm vetoing that.
Exercise my veto, man.
All right.
I might regret that veto, but I don't want to watch that stupid movie.
It looks ridiculous.
I think that might be another one that didn't. Like Divergent, that might be another one that didn't quite finish.
Yeah.
Like there's three of those on this list.
I have seen one of them. It might be the first one. It was bad, hence spending my veto.
Yeah.
Well, and instead, you will be watching Renaissance, a film by Beyonce. That's a step up.
Okay! Yes!
That's how you veto.
That
is the best veto ever.
Thank you. Thank you.
I forgot it went to number one.
Of course it did.
I shouldn't have doubted. Where can that be streamed?
I
think it's Netflix.
The Holdovers, while that was in theaters, and the whole theater was shaking. It was awesome.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You are not going to be able to stand me next episode.
Why?
No, just because I'm just going to be sick of how much I stand. Because the Renaissance is everything.
Yes.
It's amazing.
No, it really is. Sean, are you a Beyonce fan?
I will answer that as soon as we figure out if this is not yet available on streaming.
Oh, if this is not yet available on streaming, I feel like what we should do is bookmark it. Like, it should be like, this is an episode that has been drawn by Tony Goldwyn.
Oh, yeah. It's not even playing in Pittsburgh.
All right. Anymore. So this is what we have to do. We are going to do an episode about Renaissance, a film by Beyonce.
Yeah.
But we are not going to do it next week.
Right.
I agree. Here's what I propose. Because Tony Goldwyn wanted us to watch this and we didn't get to.
Because we want to watch
it. And because we deserve it.
Yes.
Yes.
We each get a 3-key turn Renaissance button.
Yeah.
When we get a draw and we're all like, and Renaissance is available, then we go, actually, it's Renaissance. And we'll figure out what to do with that movie we drawed later.
What an emotional roller coaster.
I know.
It's been all over the place. To answer your question, I am a Beyonce fan. I saw Beyonce in Dublin, Ireland on the tour for the self-titled album, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it was tremendous. And it was a pretty small place. Like, it was probably like an 8,000 seat place. But like,
that's
if you're on the floor, like, I'm like, Beyonce is relatively close to me. This is wonderful. And I've been doing this thing on Instagram where I'm looking at every album that won Album of the Year at the Grammys.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of them are inferior to a Beyonce album that was also nominated year.
I loved that Harry Styles album with my whole heart. And I was like, what a bummer that it came out the same year as Renaissance, the best album in 10 years. And then he fucking won?
That's crazy.
And I don't want to be mad about Harry Styles winning a Grammy for an album I loved, but how could I not be?
Well, our makeup pick is certainly available, if anything, ubiquitous. There's something about Mary.
Okay.
It's hard to avoid.
All right.
There's something about Mary.
I haven't seen it since it came out, so it will be nice to revisit as an adult.
That's fine.
It's fine.
You know, no, I'm not
I still think we won out on my veto.
Oh, that's still
yeah,
that's still a big step up.
Okay.
Coming next week, a serious conversation. Is sperm funny? I say no. We'll find out.
It's not just sperm. It's ejaculate.
I was trying not to say cum or jizz, and you
we've covered it all.
You yeah, want you one-upped me by saying the correct scientific
often
term.
Often the funniest choice. Free comedy lesson.
Mm-hmm. Before we get there, Mommy Dearest, September 18th of 1981. What was the number one song in America?
Betty Davis Eyes.
Ooh.
Wouldn't that be appropriate? But
right?
No.
Okay. That would be cute. I thought that would be.
Who hated this movie? She said this was not fair to Joan.
Oh,
and if
wow.
Betty Davis wow. is saying that.
Yes.
Betty Davis mm-hmm. to stand up to her mm-hmm. mortal enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Air Supply.
No, this is a duet.
Diana Ross and Lionel Richie?
Correct, with
Endless Love.
There we go.
That's the one.
I do like that song.
I'm not sure I know that song.
You will recognize it.
It certainly factors. Those are two of the loudest voices in We Are the World. So plays into our previous conversation.
Do I step up to the mic or do I lean into the mic?
We didn't even talk about Cyndi Lauper's necklace. That's
oh, God.
Oh, that's such a great moment.
What's that noise?
Just Michael Jackson sheepishly correcting a sound problem by staring at a lady really hard and thinking about her jewelry. What a moment in time.